Hello, Texas Ranger fans. Welcome to Scooping the Texas Rangers on a Wednesday edition. Yeah, it's another scorcher out there. 111 degrees here in North Texas. How do you like them apples? As we get ready for the edition, yeah, I hope you've been able to join us the last couple of days. And we're going to have a great, great show for you today. We're going to get the San Diego story on the Mike Adams trade. And joining us now from 619sports.net, a guy that covers the San Diego Padres is Craig Elston. Craig, how are you?
Doing real well, Todd, Mike. Happy to be on the podcast. Thanks a lot for welcoming me in from East County, San Diego, where it is only 91 degrees right now.
Well, you know what's funny? My mom has been complaining that she can't do her daily walk. She lives in Rancho Bernardo. And she's going, it's just too hot to do the day. And I said, Mom, just stop with the hot. You don't know what hot is.
Yeah. You know, you got to understand, we pay for our weather.
Yeah, you sure do. That's the absolute truth. So, yes, you do.
So we complain about it because we pay for it.
Well, Craig, let's get into the Mike Adams deal. And all along with the Texas Rangers, the name that everybody was talking about with Heath was Heath Bell. And yeah. Every Ranger fan was asking, when are we going to get the Heath Bell deal done? When is this going to be through? When is John Daniels going to complete the deal? And all along, we kept hearing they're only haggling over one name. It was going to be a 3-for-1 deal. And then all of a sudden, Sunday afternoon, a 2-for-1 for Mike Adams comes up, and everybody's going, wait, what? What happened?
Yeah, it's very interesting, and I think John Daniels, in retrospect, deserves a lot of credit for taking advantage of a situation that was really foreign to Jed Hoyer. The Padres GM admitted it in the press conference he had a half hour after the trading deadline, where he said, this was my first experience ever at being a seller. You know, as a part of the Red Sox front office, obviously every July was about who can we go out and get to make our 25-man roster championship quality. And then he comes to San Diego, and in his first year here, he winds up being a buyer as well with a team that was unexpectedly making a run to the playoffs last season. So with that inexperience, it appears, as you know, as we get to, in retrospect, hear about and kind of follow where that trade evolved, it really does appear to me that John Daniels held the high ground, had the prospects that Jed Hoyer wanted. Jed essentially approached being a seller like he was a buyer. He had targeted the two kids, Erland and Wieland, out of the Rangers system, two players he wanted to acquire. He wanted to offer Heath Bell to get those two players. Daniels held out for Adams, and in the end, it was Hoyer who moved. He went from Bell to Adams, and the more coveted reliever goes for the same price tag.
Hey, Craig, Mike here. You had a chance to watch both Mike Adams and Heath Bell quite often. It's been on the record as saying that Bell said he should have he is only the closer because he got there before Mike. Watching the two, who do you think was the more talented reliever?
There's almost no question in my mind, Mike, that if Mike Adams wasn't the best reliever in baseball the last 2 years, that he's in the top two or three. From a performance standpoint, nobody's missing more bats than Mike Adams. Mike's dominant in terms of his command and control. He's almost unhittable. He's posted back-to-back Eckersley-like ERAs. And really, you know, Mike Adams' previous health conditions, you know, the fact that he was injury-prone early in his career, I think that as well, the Padres, especially in the first couple of years that Mike was on the big league team, they were very careful about not using him back-to-back games, kind of nursing him through the season, managing his innings pitched. But really, the last 3 years, he's proven to be both durable and ultra-effective. Now, Heath Bell's got the classic closer's attitude, and he also has a proven track record of saving ball games. Mike Adams has never been asked to save ball games other than the very rare occasion where the heater had gone four straight days and he couldn't answer the bell, and then Adams would pick up, you know, his one or two saves on the year. Being a closer is still something he has not done and proven that he could do at any level, never mind the major league level. So still something that Mike needs to be able to show he can do, get those last three outs. But from a sabermetric standpoint, you know, if you look at it just in terms of stuff, results, and the fact that he was pitching very high leverage innings, in those eighth innings, quite often facing the best batters in a lineup in the eighth instead of the ninth. There's no question that Adams, from a performance standpoint, was the best Padres reliever the last couple of years. Bell gets the saves, but Adams is the guy who's lights out.
Well, Craig, let's talk a little bit about Heath Bell, because he made it very, very clear that he wanted to re-sign with San Diego and went as far as to say that he would give them the San Diego discount. Now, we don't exactly know what that number would be, but from everything being talked about now, and especially in the San Diego media, according to some of the tweets I've been seeing, there's no way that the Padres will bring him back. Where do you think that situation is now, and where will it be at the end of the season?
You know, it's really interesting, Todd, and the next few months are going to play out how we really view Jed Hoyer's performance at the July 31st, 2011 trade deadline. Because in my mind, things can go very much sideways in the Heath Bell situation. And already, Jed must be up in his office wrapping his head slowly against the wall and saying, why didn't I find some home for this guy prior to the deadline? If you listen to the podcast we have up, of course, after you're done listening to Scooping the Texas Rangers, if you surf on over to 619sports.net, we had on Joe Sheehan from Sports Illustrated, a longtime friend of mine, national baseball writer now. But Joe really, you know, laid it out perfectly in the hours before Heath Bell did exactly what Joe predicted. The free agent market for closers this winter is saturated. There's going to be 7 to 8 different closers available. Bell's age, going into his age 34, 35 year, that is going to scare off a general manager. And his strikeout rate has declined from 30% swing and miss in 2010, 27% in 2009, all the way down into the teens, 18% in 2011. So you look at those things, and Bell looks at these things, and the 3-year, $35 million deal, the Brad Lidge or Rafael Soriano type deal that had been out there in previous markets may not be out there in the winter of 2011, spring of 2012. So that's what makes arbitration a very nice option for Heath Bell. It's going to be much more money than he would get in any multi-year deal with the San Diego Padres. No, it's not guaranteed money, but he can't be traded until June. And as such, Heath is really in the catbird seat. It took him going home and talking to his wife the night after the trade deadline to figure it out. He came out the next day and said, yeah, if they offer me arbitration, I'm going to take it. And really, that puts Jed Hoyer in a world of hurt, Todd. He has lost exactly what he said to everybody that he had, which is draft pick protection. The idea that he was going to offer Heath arbitration, he wasn't going to take it. He was going to go sign on the free agent market somewhere, and the Padres would get, you know, as long as it was one of the top half teams in Major League Baseball, the equivalent of 2 first-round draft picks in exchange for letting Heath Bell go. That's all off the table if he accepts arbitration. Now, instead, they're going to be on the hook for probably a $12, $12.5 million 1-year contract for a closer that they didn't deal, that they can't trade until June of this next season. So if there's any way at all that Heath Bell sneaks through waivers, I have to think that Hoyer would sell him for a bag of baseballs and a promise right now to a team that would come calling to avoid this contract snafu, which is barreling right down the highway towards the Padres front office come this winter.
Greg, switching gears right back to Mike Adams. There was an article written by a local writer here in Dallas detailing how Mike Adams had shoulder surgery in 2009. And how he came out of that shoulder surgery throwing a Mariano Rivera-like cutter, and he threw it almost as often as Rivera throws his, almost 60% of the time. Talk about that pitch and how that makes Mike Adams so effective.
What it does, Mike, is it makes Adams as tough on left-handed hitters as some of the top lefty specialist pitchers that come down the pipe and that teams like the St. Louis Cardinals overpay for. Here's a guy with that cutter running in on the lefties, running away from the right-handed batters, great natural movement, snaps in the low 90s. He still has a very effective slider to complement it, but doesn't need it that much because he can command the cutter to both sides of the plate. And when you're a right-handed pitcher who can dominate left-handed hitters. What value that is to a manager. And now, really, you look at what Wash can do, and he can spot Uehara or Adams, depending on how a lineup breaks down, wherever he wants to there in the latter third of the season. And then, of course, if Adams is super effective this year, gives them the option, which I'm sure they're going to explore, to return Neftali Feliz to the starting rotation next year.
Well, Craig, let's talk about Adams a little bit. And last night was not a debut that he wants to remember. And albeit the conditions were not great. I mean, not a lot of pitchers will be able to pitch in a downpour because with that cutter, you're really going to have to get a grip on that ball to throw it effectively. But all the criticism that came with Mike Adams, what do you say to the fans that are saying this was a bad trade for the Rangers to make? Maybe this guy isn't as good as we thought he was.
How about wait till the next game? I mean, if anyone wants to jump down Daniel's throat after one game or one appearance, then I'd say that they're pretty geared up for Cowboys training camp. Maybe they need to go hit one of those tackling dummies. Baseball's about patience. It's long term. You're hoping that Mike Adams gives you what? Optimistically, 30 to 35 dominant innings the rest of the season, including the postseason, and then sets the stage for being a valuable, controllable asset in 2012. I mean, this is a guy that you're going to have for more than just one pennant drive as well. So don't worry about one performance, is what I would say to those guys.
Well, and with Adams too, what I like so much is after his performance, was less than he wanted. He came right out and said, "Look, I was nervous. I packed up a house for the first time. I moved on Tuesday, flew here on Tuesday, and came straight to the ballpark." Talk about the personality of Adams and the kind of team player he aspires to be, and what kind of a person he was like to be around for the guys in San Diego.
Laid back, unassuming. Maybe I'm sounding very Southern California, but if I would describe him in a word, it's chill. That's the kind of guy Mike Adams was. From the kind of baggy way that he wears his uniform, always has that kind of half smile on his face, and just comes in very quietly, does the job. That was the thing about so many Mike Adams performances. They went unnoticed because it was nine pitches, one, two, three, zip, zap, zoop, and on we go to the bottom of the eighth. And a lot of times people wouldn't even notice. He would kind of creep in and creep out with a one, two, three inning underneath his arm. So, if there's one thing that I think is a legitimate question that a Rangers fan could ask about bringing in Adams instead of Heath Bell. Obviously, they could have had Bell for the exact same deal that they got Adams for. The one question you have is that Bell has that attitude. He's got that fire as a closer, and he has proven it. Bell's a guy who's going to slam the door. You give him the ball in the ninth, and he's going to slam the door. He's a larger-than-life personality who is perfect for the closer's role. People hate him on the other team. They love him on your team. He pumps his fist. He screams and yells after he gets the third out. Adams is the opposite. He's a quiet guy. He's the guy who just goes in there, does the job, and gets done. And in the back of my mind, I've always wondered, well, what's it going to be like when Bell gets traded and Adams becomes the closer? He's so darn effective, but it is a different thing when you've got the spotlight on you. And I think Mike's going to find that out here in the literal heat of a pennant race in Texas, but I'm not betting against the guy. He's terrific, and he's gone through a lot of stuff in his career. This is an exciting opportunity for him, and in his hometown too. But anyone's going to have nerves in those situations.
Well, Craig, we talk about the Heath Bell situation and how he's going to accept arbitration if the Padres offer it to him. There seems to be a lot of blame going around with Heath Bell as far as opening his mouth and saying that he wants to stay, he doesn't want to be traded. But isn't there some blame to be put on Jed Hoyer as far as not making the deal? Was he too stingy at the deadline as far as what he wanted in return?
I don't think there's any question about it right now, Todd. I don't think there's any question about it. Right now, I would give Jed a negative grade for how he attacked the trading deadline in 2011. Yes, he shed Ludwig's salary, likely for nothing. You look at, for example, the return that the A's got for Ziegler, a reliever who is inferior to Mike Adams, and they got a position player who can rake in Brandon Allen. Now, you could say, well, where would Brandon Allen fit in the Padres system? You could secondarily and very accurately say the Diamondbacks and Padres will never make a trade with one another with all the bad blood with Jeff Morat going over, and then you've got KT on that side. There's never going to be a trade there. Okay, I understand that as well. But the point is, you look at the returns that Toronto got for flipping around Jackson and some spare parts. You look at the return that the A's got for Ziegler, a side-arming trick reliever. And you look at what Jed Hoyer got. He got a very good return. If Adams doesn't perform brilliantly for the Rangers, and if Erlen or Whelan develop into a five-year starter for the Padres, then Hoyer's going to be able to say he won that trade, and he'll probably be right. But the situation where he has truly painted himself into a corner with Heath Bell, that's where I think Jed really had a learning experience at this deadline, and I think he made a mistake. He gambled on something that he didn't actually know he had, which was the draft pick protection for Heath Bell. That was all based on the assumption that Heath Bell wouldn't take arbitration. Heath punctured that balloon with a giant pin yesterday. And now Jed is left holding that deflated balloon and going, oops. And I think by holding that high price, look what happens. Rasmus goes to Toronto, doesn't come to San Diego. The Phillies make a move. They go get Hunter Pence. They don't trade for Heath Bell. By holding Bell to such a high price, now he is going to wind up being the one holding the price tag when all is said and done.
Well, talking about Erlen and Whelan, like you were just a second ago, let's talk about these two guys for a second. Look, these are two guys that, while they may not have been 1-2 in the Rangers organization, they are certainly up there near the top five, easily top seven. It's been said that they both have a ceiling of about a three, but also a floor. There's so much potential for these guys, and I've heard Erlen especially is an extreme flyball pitcher. Talk about how that'll definitely benefit Erlen and Petco as opposed to Rangers Ballpark in Arlington.
My friend Tom Krasovic, a longtime former Padres beat writer who has a blog now at insidethepadres.blogspot.com, Tom is still very deep in with a number of scouts and executives around the National League. And he wrote after the trade deadline, which I thought was a great line, he said the undisputed winners in the Rangers-Padres trade are Robbie Erlen and Joe Whelan. Because here are two guys who are control, command, efficient, polished pitchers who are going to the pitcher's heaven of Petco Park. Essentially, if you can figure out how to not give up a home run to left field at Petco Park, you're going to have yourself a great career. And when you look at the history of Petco Park, and this is a great kind of like surprise stat, and Krasovic also gave this to me, the two pitchers who are 1-2 lifetime, with enough innings to qualify in Petco Park ERA are Clayton Richard and Wade LeBlanc, two guys who there's no chance could pitch for an American League team, couldn't pitch in the American League, couldn't pitch against an AL lineup, but you put them at Petco Park, and you let them do their thing and paint the outside corner and dare hitters to hit the ball to center field or to right field. And those hitters find out in night games that they can't get the job done. So for Erlen and Whelan, it's the opportunity of a lifetime. Instead of going down to sizzling Arlington, they're going to come to pitcher's heaven. And the thing that I hold in reserve, of course, guys, is the old axiom. There's no such thing as a pitching prospect. Right now the Padres are getting a little bit excited about their AA rotation, and they're starting to say, hey, look at what we've got down there. Now you got Casey Kelly and Ramon Castro and Erlen and Whelan, and they're stacking up guys, and they're hoping that they're going to have themselves a young, controllable rotation of stars like the Oakland A's had around the turn of the century. But, it's a long way from that happening. I remember around that same time, the Padres were making the same kind of noises about the rotation they had in the minor leagues, a full rotation that it sounded like was going to come up to the majors, and it was Dennis Tankersley and Adam Eaton and Ben Howard and Eric Sear and Jake Peavy. And these were the five guys that were going to become the nucleus of the next great Padres team. And what happened? Jake Peavy was a really great starter. And Dennis Tankersley was terrible. Ben Howard barely saw the majors. Eric Sear barely saw the majors. Adam Eaton was a serviceable to average starter, best known for helping fleece the Texas Rangers for Adrian Gonzalez as part of one of the worst trades in Rangers history. So, but not very notable for how well he pitched. That what I'm trying to say is that you can stack up as many pitchers in Double A as you like. There's no guarantee that those guys are going to be great. But that said, if Erlen and Wieland, between the two of them, deliver 1,200 to 1,400 innings of serviceable starting, serviceable innings pitched as starters for the San Diego Padres, then unquestionably Jed Hoyer's going to have won that trade because you're going to get maybe 90 to 100 innings out of Mike Adams before he winds up cashing in and going into free agency.
Well, the last question for me, Craig, and it's this, and it's very, very simple. With the Padres theoretically on the hook for Heath Bell's arbitration at the end of the season, is there any way in your mind the Padres make a deal for Heath Bell, a waiver wire deal, essentially?
In order for it to happen, Bell would have to get through waivers unblocked. And the idea that a guy like Bell is going to get through that shark pool where all the other GMs are, afraid, I would say. Now, here's the interesting question, just as I say it out loud. Let's say someone does claim Bell on waivers. Would Jed Hoyer have the balls to just let him go? Because really, when you think about it, right now, from the Padres' standpoint, the worst thing that can happen is for him to accept arbitration. That's just about the worst case scenario right now. Even though you wouldn't get anything for him, the salary relief you might be able to get. Wow. That would be a tough question that I'm sure Jed is going to have to answer at some point, because I just don't see Bell getting through waivers unblocked. And as long as he gets blocked and the Padres aren't willing to just let him go to the team that claims him, then Bell's going to be a Padre the rest of the year. If he's a Padre the rest of the year and he's a man of his word, which I think he is, he'll be a Padre in 2012.
Well, and the last thing I want to touch on, and the hardest part, I believe, for Erlen and Wieland is over. It has to be switching dugouts in a double-A game of a team that you just no-hit 2 days ago.
Yeah. And I heard Jed in the clubhouse after the game talking to a couple of the reporters and chuckling, and he said, it didn't help us in the trade negotiations to have Wieland no hit our club and basically shove it in, shove it down our throats in the week that we're trying to acquire him for him to blow a no hitter past our double A team. Didn't
No, it's
exactly
San
help.
Antonio's offense is nothing to laugh at.
No, it's all right. Some of the pieces moved up to Tucson, but still, that's quite an accomplishment, and certainly it's the type of thing that helps you sell a trade back in your hometown. But you know what? Who knows if that was the difference between Mike Adams or Heath Bell moving out of San Diego, that no-hitter. It very well could have been.
Well, Craig, I really appreciate you joining us. Craig Elston, 619 Sports. Give out your Twitter, where else fans can find you and what you're working on.
All right. Hey, you can follow me on Twitter. Over 3,000 followers now at 619 Sports. We're always live tweeting from wherever we are in the San Diego sporting world. You can also come check out my webpage, 619sports.net. 619sports.net. Great podcast up there right now, breaking down the Padres trade deadline. And we're going to have reports from Chargers camp starting tomorrow once again as well.
All right, sounds good. Craig, thank you very much for the time, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right.
Thanks, Craig.
And that's Craig Elston with 619sports.net. Mike, he had some real good stuff, and before we get into it, we're going to take a quick break. And on the other side, Mike and I are going to talk about everything that we heard Craig Elston just say. We're going to talk a little bit about Mike Adams and his performance last night. And Craig had some real good stuff about Heath Bell that even I didn't know. So on the other side of the break, we'll talk about that. Stick around. This is Scooping the Texas Rangers. Welcome back to Scooping the Texas Rangers. I know that was a long segment with Craig Elston, but a lot of good information. And Mike, you and I were talking at the break, and you and I wanted to touch on Mike Adams because Craig was very complimentary with Adams as far as being a Padre. But the one thing that you talked about was that cutter because, as you said it, it's Mariano Rivera-esque. I think that's a big, big compliment for this guy.
It's a huge compliment. I mean, we've seen him called Mariano Rivera Jr., and I can't think of a higher compliment for a closer slash reliever. That is just the absolute pinnacle. Rivera at 42 can still shut the door without blinking an eye. So, and it all has to do with that cutter. Like you said, it can saw off the lefties. It goes so far in with that natural movement at 91, 92. And then the way it tails away from, you know, from everybody else, it's just, it's a scary looking pitch. And I know you couldn't see him really locate it last night, you know, the combination of nerves and the awful, awful rain. But it's going to be a pitch that you're going to, it's going to leave your jaw hanging open.
Well, and the reaction last night, and for those of you who didn't see the game, and let's touch on that a little bit, because Mike Adams after the game even admitted that he was really nervous, and for good reason. Mike Adams leaves San Diego, a club that he's been with for the last 4 years, I believe, takes the flight to Detroit and joins the team just a few hours before game time and comes into the game with a score tied at 5-5 after a Mike Napoli home run. He gives up a long fly ball for an out on the first out, which actually scared me right off the bat. I thought, oh no, I thought that was the home run right off the bat. But those conditions, Mike, and I think you and I are going to agree on this, was not the typical debut that Mike Adams wanted to have, regardless of where he left that cutter and it was right over the plate. Those conditions are not conducive to him getting a grip on the pitch because he needs a dry environment for him to really get that pitch to move.
He does, and he had, you know, no excuse that he wanted to present. Cliff Lee came out his first outing with the Rangers last year against the Orioles. He gave up 6 runs and 3 home runs in his first outing. These things happen. These guys have to adjust to these new teams, and it's a very difficult situation to come into. The Rangers had just played 7 innings of incredibly boring baseball. I mean, let's be serious. Colby Lewis was bad. I said he was using his Houdini pitches to get out of some of the jams he was in. Colby Lewis, I mean, Mike Adams did not lose that game. Colby Lewis lost that game, without a doubt. And so Adams is forced to come in into an 8th inning where we have a miraculous 2-home-run inning off Benoit. And he has to come in this high-pressure situation. The rain only comes down for his inning. And he, you know, and he has a mistake. It happens. And I quoted on Twitter last night. I was like, "Who? Raise your hand if you want Arthur Rhodes back. Please, please raise your hands because I would love to see him."
Yeah, and that's frustrating. You know, and fans are going to be in, you know, they're going to have the knee-jerk reaction. And while I can understand that, I think it's unfair to a guy that's just coming into a situation where he leaves a team he's been with 4 years, doesn't know the guys he's coming into play with, doesn't know the situation. And you're right, the rain started coming down as soon as he came into the game. Now, he gets the 2 outs and give the Detroit batter, I think, was it Bosch?
Yeah, I was gonna point on that too. That kid fouled off at least 6 pitches that I saw. That was a heck of an at bat.
Yeah, you got and a lot of people took shots at me for saying, you know what, you got to give him credit because he really did foul off some good pitches. I mean, Mike was throwing the fastball, he's throwing the slider, he's throwing the cutter. It was getting fouled off, and then Mike Adams leaves one over the plate. It was the one pitch, but give, you know, Bosch some credit. It was a good at bat. And when I said that, I had somebody reply to me, "Are you gonna give a defensive back credit for Romo, Tony Romo, the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, for throwing an interception? If the defensive back makes a good play in the ball, you're darn right I'm going to give him credit for it."
Yeah, there are bad offensive plays, and then there are good defensive plays. If you want to talk about football and those standards, each side is capable of making good plays. And Bosch, he fouled off all of Adams' best pitches, and so Adams was forced to go to a changeup, his 4th best pitch, to try to get him out. And I tell you what, if he had left it where he wanted to leave it, down and away, where Torrealba had the sign, I guarantee you, Bosch would have had no chance of slowing down to hit that ball.
Well, and you know the asinine statement of the day, and I got this from a friend of mine from San Diego who actually had to rewind it to make sure he was hearing it right. The guys on Baseball Tonight, congratulations ESPN for not doing your homework before you blurted out this stupid sentence. And I don't know who it was. All I was told is this was what was said on Baseball Tonight. They said, well, maybe because Mike Adams and Yorvi Torrealba haven't played together, maybe that had something to do with it. I'm sorry, but Torrealba and Adams were teammates last year, or perhaps you didn't watch the San Diego Padres.
He's the only one on the team that he knew. Torrealba, I mean by that.
Yeah, and we all knew that. And for an ESPN guy, and this is what drives me crazy. And living in San Diego, I got used to the mid-major mentality, we're not being watched because they're not going to stay up to watching a West Coast game. And I understand it'd be a 10 o'clock start on the East Coast. But come on, I mean, if you're going to throw that out, at least make sure you're right.
The fact checking at ESPN shocks me sometimes. It's just, I understand that you have 30, 30-ish teams to look over, and it's impossible to do your homework on every single one of them. But if you don't know something, don't say it.
Yeah, and I mean, it was just an asinine statement to make. And, Mike is a professional. He's going to come back tonight if he gets the opportunity. And you know what? I'm sure he's already walked into Wash's office and said, "Hey, Skip, if you want to bring me in, I want the ball. I want a chance to redeem myself, and I can do this. I'm not the pitcher that gave up a home run. I want the ball. Bring me into the game with a game on the line, and I'm going to get it done. I'm going to go 1, 2, 3. I'm going to prove everybody wrong." That's the kind of guy Mike Adams is.
And that's the kind of guy Wash will put into the game.
And, I think it's unfair for the knee-jerk reaction. And I get that Dallas fans are like that because they've been so disappointed with the Dallas Cowboys, who have one playoff win in 16 seasons. And I'm not going to feel sorry for you guys at all. I'm sorry. But
Well, I loved Craig's comment about the Cowboy fans wanting to go hit the tackling dummy. The Dallas fan is not a patient fan. They're used to winning. I don't know why, but they're used to winning and they want to win every year. And so that's like a mentality that the Texas Rangers have to deal with sometimes. And that goes back to discussing baseball IQ when we were talking about the wave yesterday. Baseball IQ has to be better in this town. You have to be more patient. You have to understand the process that baseball takes.
Well, and remember, there was another debut last year at almost this exact time. A guy by the name of Cliff Lee makes his Rangers debut and not only gives up one home run, not only gives up two, but he gave up how many, Mike?
Three home runs.
He gave up three home runs in his debut. Now, I brought this fact up to RJ Choppy, who's a good friend of mine with 105.3 The Fan. RJ's response to me was, we give the starter the benefit of the doubt, but if you're a reliever and 30 pitches is all you're throwing, you're expected to be flawless. That is now, and I know RJ is half kidding and half tongue in cheek when he's saying that, and I know he's just trying for good radio. But if that's what he actually means, that is absolutely ridiculous.
Well, that goes back to relievers having some of the toughest jobs in baseball. People always say, "Man, look at those relievers. They have it so easy. They sit in the bullpen with their rookie backpacks and their sunflower seats, and they don't have to do anything." Listen, relievers have some of the most pressure on them as any players on the team because of guys who are of the mentality of RJ. That they expect them to come in and be flawless. The starters get, they get all the leeway, and they get, oh, it's okay. He hasn't warmed up yet. Well, you know what? He warmed up just as much as a reliever before coming into a game.
Yeah, and like I said, Mike is going to take the ball if he's called on tonight, and he's going to get the job done. But something else RJ said that I thought was funny, and I fired him off a text as soon as he said it. He said, "Do you want, what is Mike Adams going to do with a game on the line and two runners on and Adrian Gonzalez is at bat?" And I fired RJ off a text. I said, "You know what? I want Mike Adams in that situation. You know why? Because Mike Adams is probably the only, actually, no, not probably. He is the only Rangers pitcher that knows Adrian Gonzalez."
Oh, Adams, and I think just a little bit of Uhara. We've talked about him being in the AL East. But yeah, I think Adams being with the Padres has more knowledge of Adrian Gonzalez than anybody else. And of course, he's the one you want up there, throwing to him with the game on the line.
Well, when we come back, we're going to take a quick break because we ran long on the first segment. So when we come back, we're going to touch on the game last night, a little bit more on Mike Adams, and then we're going to get into the game tonight between the Rangers and the Detroit Tigers. Matt Harrison will take the ball today for the Rangers. So we'll touch on that a little bit and a lot more. So hang tight. We'll be right back. This is Scoop from the Texas Rangers. Welcome back to Scooping the Texas Rangers. As we get back into Matt Harrison, Mike Adams, and tonight's game against the Detroit Tigers. And real quick, Mike, let's finish up on Mike Adams. And just to, we won't go very long on this, but this is a guy that I believe will be the Rangers closer next season. I think Uehara will be the setup man, or maybe they'll do a closer by committee and just see, if Mike Adams has gone two or three games in a row, they'll go to Uehara, or the same with, if Uehara goes two or three games in a row, they'll go with Adams. I don't think there's going to be one closer, but Mike has the mentality of a closer. Now, he made a comment that somebody I think took a little out of proportion earlier today. He said that he's not the worker that Heath Bell is. And he doesn't mean that Mike doesn't mean that he doesn't work as hard as Heath Bell. Now, that being said, Bell is one of the hardest workers. If you ever see this guy's workout methods and what he does and the kind of regiment that he keeps, you'd be amazed. I mean, this guy is an incredible athlete. But Mike Adams, it doesn't have the build that Bell does. Bell is much, much thicker, and Adams is the more slender of the two. But Mike has a couple of pitches that make him stand out above Bell, and he doesn't have to overpower hitters. Bell goes with that fastball a lot more than Mike Adams will. If you watch the two pitchers, you're going to see Bell go a lot more with that fastball. Therefore, Bell is going to have to lift a lot more weights than Adams. Adams is going to refine his pitches, his slider, that changeup, that cutter, and he's only throwing, I think, 92 to 94 with the fastball. He doesn't need to overpower hitters. So my point with saying this is, fans don't take this out of proportion and think, oh, Mike Adams isn't working hard. He doesn't have to work as hard as Heath Bell.
Well, I think with what Craig was saying, you're seeing the difference in personalities and the difference in pitch styles, how they almost line up exactly. Look, Heath Bell is kind of a big personality with big overpowering pitches who wants to blow a fastball by you and, do his own version of the, Brian Wilson dance on the mound, and he's excitable and he's just that huge guy. While Adams seems to be more chilled. His cutter is going to slide right by you. His slider is a great pitch. And he's never going to overpower you. He's going to trick you. And he's going to make you look silly doing it. And I think with Mike Adams drawing Mariano Rivera closer type comparisons, especially with the cutter that does what his cutter does, I don't think there's any comparison on which of the two I'd rather have here. Work methods or not, I think Mike Adams will prove why he's the best pitcher.
Well, and even Mariano Rivera has his slip-ups. You remember the World Series against the Arizona Diamondbacks? He gave up the game winner to Gonzalez that day. So, Rivera's going to have his slip-ups. Mike Adams is going to have his slip-ups. It's going to happen to a reliever. It happens
Well,
to a.
if pitching was perfect, there'd never be an end to it in any game.
That's
So
right. Yeah,
that's just how it goes.
you're absolutely right. And just to finish up, Mike Adams is going to be fine. He's going to take the ball tonight when he's called on, and he's going to get the job done. And that being said, Mike. The Rangers are back in Detroit for game two of the series. Matt Harrison is on the hill, and you and I were talking before we went on, and he has been absolutely phenomenal. And you were saying he has, what, 13 straight quality starts?
13 out of his last 14 have been quality starts.
Well, look at these numbers. I mean, with exception to the start in Houston where he gave up 5 runs through six, and I'll take away the start at home against Toronto, giving up 4 runs on 8 hits through 6 2/3. Listen to the rest of this. Against Baltimore at home, 6 innings, 11 hits, 2 earned, 5 strikeouts. The very next start against Oakland at home, 7 2/3, 6 hits, no earned, 7 strikeouts. Next start on the road against Seattle, 7 2/3, 5 hits, 1 earned, 4 strikeouts. His last start against Minnesota at home, 7 1/3, 8 hits, 1 earned, 2 strikeouts. And he is not your prototypical power pitcher, but darn if I may. Matt Harrison is going to get a heck of a lot of ground balls. But here's what concerns me, Mike, and you touched on this yesterday, both on the podcast yesterday and also on Twitter, as I saw you tweet out this fact as well. The Rangers have been bit by the error bug. Those are your words. That, I think, is a real concern, especially behind a ground ball pitcher like Matt Harrison.
It has to be because Matt Harrison is probably near the bottom third of strikeouts when it comes to AL starting pitchers, but I think he's at the absolute top of double plays turned. And that while the error bug does absolutely concern me, for whatever reason, the Rangers have no problem turning double plays. They led the majors for almost the entire year. I think they had 6 double plays they turned in one Harrison start in New York at the beginning of the year. Matt Harrison, he'll let guys on base through dinky hits and the occasional fly ball, but he understands where he has to pitch with runners on base,     װ     װ     װ     װ================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================ And he's kind of become that Colby Lewis of last year with men in scoring position or men on. He just locks it down. He's not going to strike anybody out, but he's going to get through his six and two-thirds, his sevens, with absolutely minimal runs given up, and he's going to keep the Rangers in a game. And that's what's made him his the Rangers' most effective starter of late.
Well, and this is a guy that I had watched come through the Frisco Rough Riders and then up into the big leagues. And I wasn't sure how Matt Harrison was going to handle himself in the big leagues. But, Mike, do you think that he's proven that he's more than a fifth starter? Can he possibly be, let's say, next year or a couple years down the road, maybe a number two or number three?
Absolutely. I think even right now he's our fourth starter, and you want to see him become a number two because you don't know how things with CJ or even Colby Lewis are going to play out, especially getting after next year. After next year, so many people go into free agency, and this lineup of the Texas Rangers is really going to look a little bit different. While many fans aren't going to want to admit that and really don't want to talk about it yet, this lineup could be very different, and that includes the starting pitching. So with Matt Harrison, the incredible mental maturity that I've seen from last year to this year, I absolutely believe that not only can he be a number two starter, but I think he will.
And Matt Harrison really does impress a lot of people, and he will have his rough starts. Like I just mentioned, he's had a couple of rough ones. The one against Toronto, we gave up 4 runs. The one on the road against Houston, we gave up 5 runs. But really, in those starts, Mike, there are some defensive lapses, and I think Houston was one of them, where there are a couple of errors. And I liken him a lot to Derek Holland. When Matt Harrison begins to struggle, that's when he starts to overthrow his pitches. He starts to leave balls over the plate a little bit more. He's not picking the corners. He's not throwing the pitches he should at the right time. Yeah, and is that something you see in Harrison as well?
I see it in Harrison a lot, and the problem is I'm always telling pitchers via Twitter, I'm trying to send them positive vibes. I'm saying trust your stuff, and that what that also means is trust the guys behind you. Now, obviously, the Rangers haven't given guys a lot to trust in, but you still have to imagine that when guys get into that mode of overthrowing and they're really trying to nibble, and we've talked about the dangers of nibbling, you really have to just trust yourself, locate where your catcher is telling you to, and pray that more times than not, the guys behind you, the eight guys behind you, are gonna do their job and get you out of tough spots. And I think that's been Matt Harrison's biggest upside is that he'll allow a hit or he'll walk a guy on an occasion, and then he really gets down and he trusts his team, and they turn double plays for him.
Well, one guy I'm concerned with, and this is going to be a debate between you and I, because you said, before we came back from the break that you didn't agree with my stance on this one player, and that's Ian Kinsler. This is a guy that gets a heck of a lot of scrutiny from fans because I see it all the time on Twitter. Every time he comes up to bat, they're predicting a pop-up. 9 times out of 10, they're probably right. Ian Kinsler has one hit in his last 26 at-bats with 7 strikeouts, 2 walks. That, Mike, tells me that either one, he's not working the count, or two, he's just plain bad.
Well, with Ian Kinsler, you're talking about probably one of the most polarizing Rangers that I can remember in recent times. Fans love him or fans hate him. There's really no in between on this guy. And look, as a leadoff guy, I think there's absolutely no way you can get rid of him because he gets on base. Look, last year, even though his OPS was down 794, this year, even with his average down almost 45 points from where it was last year, his OPS is only down a total of 9 points from 794 to 785. This guy still finds a way to get on base, and he's still slugging at a good 437. I think what makes Kinsler so polarizing of a character is the fact that his attitude. We talked about CJ's attitude. Kinsler, while he doesn't have an attitude with the media or post games, you can see it in his body language. Anytime he pops up, he's just as frustrated as all those fans. And the fans take it the wrong way because he's slamming his bat down. He's just jogging down to first on these little kind of dinkers that rarely get out of the infield, and the pop-ups are frustrating to him because he has that sort of uppercut swing. It all has to do with the rotation of his hips and picking his head up, and that's something that you have to work with Scott Kulbaugh on. You got to trust your hitting coach, and that's where we lost one of the greats in Clint Hurdle, because the things he did with hitters last year made the Texas offense almost legendary. But and so with Kinsler, while his average is down, his production really is not. And as a leadoff guy, I think he's just so crucial because while he does work the counts, but he will swing at some absolutely silly counts. He'll pop it up on 2-0. He'll pop it up on 3-1. And that's what really frustrates people with Ian Kinsler.
Well, and this is where we're going to disagree, Because Kinsler, to me, is a power hitter that really isn't. Kinsler is not built for a guy that's going to hit 25, 30 home runs a year. Now, that being said, Kinsler either needs to, one, stop swinging for the fences, or two, level out his swing, because I think that's exactly what he's doing, is trying to swing for the fences. He's not going to be Nelson Cruz. He's not going to be Josh Hamilton. So I will give you this, Mr. McGee. It's time for the Rangers to look at a deal for Ian Kinsler. What say you?
I say absolutely no way. And you're talking about a guy who is swinging for the fences. Look, this is a guy in 2009. He hit 31 home runs. He has that kind of power. It's all in his swing, and right now maybe a little bit between his head. Ian Kinsler, he does things for the Texas Rangers on defense at second base that I say almost no other player can do. And while sometimes it can drive me crazy with his basket catches, this guy has range and arm strength that are absolutely irreplaceable, in my opinion, for what you're going to get for him. I'm not saying you're stuck with Ian Kinsler, although some fans are definitely going to feel that way. I'm just saying that Ian Kinsler needs to be here to stay because he is a guy that, if he does nothing else, he gets on base and he draws a lot of attention and positive or negative criticism. He's bringing viewership to the Texas Rangers.
Well, the reason I say that he needs to get dealt, not only with his struggles, and I just don't think that he is the guy that the Rangers need at second base anymore. And while he's not exactly great defensively, he's not bad either. But with Jurickson Profar, one of their top prospects, and he is a shortstop, but even Michael Young has moved more than once as far as position goes. If the Rangers are so high on Jurickson Profar, I believe they can move Ian Kinsler either for a starter, and I'm not saying this season, maybe this offseason, maybe at the trade deadline next year. But if you move Ian Kinsler, you open up second base. If the Rangers are really sold on Elvis Andrus, they can move him to second base or move Jurickson Profar to second base, especially, like I said, if this team is that high on this young shortstop.
Well, I think this team is definitely that high on Jurickson Profar, but the problem is you're rolling the dice that Elvis is going to stick around. To ensure that Elvis stays, you're going to have to throw him more money than you originally wanted to, because if Elvis up and leaves for a bigger contract and Kinsler's gone, then you're stuck with who? I mean, who does this team have behind him other than, the star that Jurickson Profar is going to be? I think at this point dealing Kinsler is premature. Let him get into the offseason, or hopefully into the offseason. Let him get deeper into the season. And I know that he's shown you absolutely nothing this season, average-wise, that shows you he's going to turn it around. I think he hit maybe .390 for 10 days earlier this month when everyone was on a hot streak. But Kinsler is one of those guys. He's a battler, and I think he's going to battle, and I think he's going to turn it around, and I think he's going to be, a good addition to this Rangers lineup, at least until his contract is up.
Well, and here's the thing with Kinsler. I just don't think that he is a long-term answer for the Rangers. I think that he is really past where the Rangers thought, or I shouldn't say past, but he's not what the Rangers were hoping for at this point in his tenure. And I think that you can kick the tires. I think you can call around and say, what can we get for Ian Kinsler? If it's not a deal that John Daniels can make, he's not going to make it. But I still think you need to kick the tires. I think that Kinsler is really, I'm not going to say wore out his welcome, but I'll get close to it. He's just not the guy that the Rangers offense needs, especially if he's struggling this badly. They need a player that's going to come in, that's going to get, they can do the little things. Jurickson Profar can put down a bunt, he can move runners. They can't have a guy at second base, not only maybe just above average defensively, but a guy that can't get runners around in scoring position. He can't even move runners from first to second on a bunt or second to third or get the sac fly. They need someone in here that can make that happen. Although this team can score 7, 8 runs a game, if Kinsler's going 0 for 4, 0 for 3, 0 for 4, 0 for 4 for 7, 8 straight nights, what good really is he doing them?
Well, and this is the stretch that he's in right now that I understand is just, it's absolutely abysmal and it's tough to watch. And he's gone through at least two, maybe three of these stretches this year. But you have to think, Kinsler's been with this team in the big league since 2006. And he's been, other than the last 2 years, he's been in at least 120 games for all those years. 103 in 2010, we had those lingering issues. And only this year is probably the first year that we've seen the drop off in his average. And like I said, I've told you before, the OPS is staying the same. But what you're getting with Kinsler right now is his first tough year. And I'm not willing to immediately deal him after his first tough year. But I'm not going to disagree with you saying you don't at least kick around the tires. Nobody is, untradeable when it comes to the offseason. If there is a kick down the door offer that is going to make this team better, then you have to at least entertain the idea. So, kicking the tires on Kinsler is a good idea, but I don't think shopping Kinsler around and looking for a chance to abandon him after his first bad year is the way to go.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Ian Kinsler, and we'll wrap up the show, talk a little bit about the Rangers coming up tonight and tomorrow. And I believe they return home after this for a home stretch. So stay with us. We've got a lot more to talk about. This is Scooping the Texas Rangers. Welcome back to Scooping the Texas Rangers as we finish up for a Wednesday afternoon. And we're going to close out the discussion a little bit on Mike Adams because there was a couple things that we wanted to talk about. And Mike, you found an interesting article on the Newberg Report. Talk a little bit about that. It was one bullpen the Rangers had, originally during this season and what they have now. What has he got there?
Yeah, first, Jamie Newberg is a Texas Rangers fan of considerable note. He has scouting reports on the farm system every day, and every day he sends out some really good insights that are very well written about the Rangers. And today, after such a disappointing loss last night, and everyone really jumping on Mike Adams' back when they really shouldn't have been, Newberg he pointed this out. He said, "I wanted to show you guys two things. The first thing is Dave Bush, Cody Epley, Darren Oliver, Arthur Rhodes, Pedro Strop, Brett Tomko, Ryan Tucker. And the second thing he wanted to show us was Mike Adams, Scott Feldman, Neftali Feliz, Mark Lowe, Darren Oliver, Yoshinori Tateyama, and Koji Uehara. There was a week in this season, this actual season, where that first list of Dave Bush, Epley, Oliver, Rhodes, that was our bullpen. That was our entire bullpen. And you're really going to tell me that you don't feel better with that second group holding up the back end of this Texas Ranger team?
Cody Epley wasn't bad. I felt for him because he had a couple of rough outings and they sent him back to the minor leagues, and we really haven't seen him since. But he had a couple of good outings where he came in and shut the door, and I thought he was going to stick around for a while. But that's definitely a big difference, and I think that's much improved from what they had earlier in the season.
Anytime you have a guy in your lineup who is named Journeyman Brett Tomko, if you have to put Journeyman in front of a reliever, chances are you don't want him in the lineup.
Well, I believe the Padres had him. I don't know if it was last season or the season before. I know he's been with the Dodgers, and he's been up and down through just about everywhere. I think it was with the Yankees at one point. But the bullpen is definitely upgraded. I think with Mike Adams and Uehara and a lot of those names that you came up with, and I know Darren Oliver is still here. Tatiana is here. Neftali Feliz, of course, as the closer. But, Mike, the question, I guess, that leaves me is this, and I was at the dentist today getting my crown finally put on the right way for the first time after five tries. And what's that?
So the dentist is an evil, evil practitioner.
He is. I don't like him, and I even told him so today. He said, "How are you?" I said, "Great, except I have to see you again, so really I'm not that great." Anyway, but he turns to me and says, "Does that make the Rangers World Series favorites?" I turned back to him and I said, "I'm not going to go that far. You?"
No, I'm not, but I'm definitely going to say it makes them World Series contenders. It doesn't make them just playoff contenders. It makes them favorites to at least get there. Anytime you have a front office that'll go and turn your biggest weakness into your greatest strength, you've got some guys who know what you're doing. And Mike Adams and Koji Uehara, those two names together, they bolster a bullpen that was getting better and getting healthier on its own. And when you add that, it really becomes almost some sort of an all-star bullpen with everybody performing the way they're supposed to be.
Well, speaking of the bullpen, you had a chat earlier today via Twitter with ESPN Dallas's Richard Durrett. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and what you came away with how that went down?
Yeah, I did. I had a chat with Richard Durrett for our first installment of the shutdown inning. with Richard Durrett. It's that group, the 2300, I'm involved in, and they gave me this opportunity to every Wednesday at 10:30 come in and really just to chat with Richard, you know, about the state of the Rangers. And I got a good chance to really kind of peek into his thoughts behind the trade deadline, and really what he liked and what he didn't like. And one thing that we definitely touched on that we haven't brought up in this podcast yet is that Mike Napoli is absolutely hitting the cover off the ball right now. I think he's batting over 400. He's slugging even better. And, of course, he comes away with the two-run home run to even have the Rangers in the game yesterday for Adams to come in. And there's been some cry on Twitter to have Napoli play every day. But I asked him, do you really mess with that rotation? And he told me, he said, it's really hard not to play Napoli when he's playing like this. But in the kind of heat that the Texas Rangers are going to be facing down the stretch, you really need both catchers. And, you know, that's it's a kind of insight that the short-sighted fans, myself included, don't really think about. And so anyone who gets a chance to Wednesdays at 10:30, check that out with me and Richard. He's off next week for vacation, so we'll be picking it up in 2 weeks. The more the merrier. It really makes the chats better if more people interact, because we can get more than just my dumb opinions on there. So, but yeah, with Richard, he's got great Ranger insight, and if you dig a little bit, you'll really find some good stuff. You see that with he hosted a chat with John Daniels today, and where he let the fans bring in the questions, and really you can see with more fans come more interesting and a wider variety of questions. And I saw a fan ask John Daniels today. They asked why they went with Uehara and Adams instead of Uehara and Bell. Why didn't we go out and get the big name like Cliff Lee? And John Daniels really pointed out that, look, you don't trade for a Cliff Lee because of a name. That's not what we're in the business of doing here. We're in the business of trading for people who have the talent. And through everything we've discussed today, I think we can both agree that we brought in the guys with the best talent.
Well, and John Daniels did a – you're right. John Daniels did a chat with ESPN today. And if you have a chance to go read that, it's definitely something that I would go touch on. There's a couple. There's one that you and I were reading, and it's from a guy by the name of Zach in Augusta, Georgia. If you have a chance to go read this, go read it and look for Zach in Augusta, Georgia. Mike, you and I were saying during the break that this is absolutely 100% a baseball question.
Oh, absolutely. He's asking about the front office. And how do they balance wanting people to succeed in their front office and letting them kind of go off and blossom in other careers? And John Daniels had just a wonderful answer and talking about how you take pride when a Clint Hurdle gets a Pittsburgh managing job, or when a Wayne Kirby joins a Baltimore major league staff, and when guys really are moving up in front offices. And guys who develop here, you want to see them succeed. You know, if they're not Chris Davis or Tommy Hunter, where they're blocked and they can't move anywhere, you really want to see them succeed at the highest level. And this is an organization that really takes pride from top to bottom in the people that they work with. And I agree. It's one of those questions, and it's one of those interviews that every Texas Ranger fan needs to go check out.
Well, something I want to touch on real quick, and I'll go back to John Daniels, but I want to bring this up with Mike Napoli. Look at these numbers over his last six games. Five of those six are multi-hit games. 4 for 5, 1 for 4, 2 for 4, 2 for 4, 2 for 4, 2 for 4. Mike Napoli has 13 hits in his last 25 at-bats. He has raised his average 34 points in 10 games from 260 to 294. That's incredible, Mike.
He's the hottest hitter in this month of July that just finished, and something tells me he's going to continue to be the hottest hitter in August.
Well, and I'm getting back to John Daniels. John Daniels is arguably the best general manager in baseball. Yankee fans, New York Yankee fans, say what you want about Brian Cashman. But when Brian Cashman has a handful of cash and a blank check, and your owner says, go get whoever you want, that's not really hard to be a GM. But when you're in John Daniels' shoes, and you're needing to look at players who fit this roster, not just the highest paid, but you're looking at players that are absolutely the right fit, you actually have to do some work. You actually have to do some digging, and you have to talk to the rest of your staff. That's a lot harder job. And for those Ranger fans who don't think that JD is arguably or even the best general manager in baseball, that you're not watching close enough.
Absolutely. And it comes with, we talked about the Cuban, Mark Cuban. When you have a GM or an owner or a guy like that who really cares about the team and really wants to see the team succeed, not just for himself and for his guys, but really for the fans. And you have that with both the Dallas Mavericks and the Texas Rangers. And it's no surprise to see who has which of the four Dallas teams has had the most success recently.
Well, Mike, that is the hour that we have. I wish we can go longer because there's a whole lot more that we wanted to talk about that we didn't get to. But in tomorrow's podcast, if you ever want to listen to entertaining radio or entertaining internet radio, we are going to talk about a former Texas Ranger that is in trouble because of an underground poker game. Now, Mike, don't you dare give away any names, but I'm going to laugh hysterically hard in tomorrow's podcast because it serves you right.
Can't wait for tomorrow, man.
I have been waiting to jump on this guy, and he hasn't done anything wrong the entire season until now, and now I get to take out my big bat and take some swings.
It's going to be a fun one, for sure.
So tune in tomorrow as we'll make fun of a former Ranger, pick at him, poke the dog, poke the bear, take swings at him, put him in the dunk tank, and so much more. So come back tomorrow. For myself, Todd Coughlin, my co-host, Mike McGee, this is Scooping the Texas Rangers. We'll see you on the flip side. So long.